Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is Amy Newmark. She is the publisher and editor-in-chief for Chicken Soup for the Soul. Amy and I will be discussing Chicken Soup's latest edition titled Think Positive for Kids, which is co-authored by Kevin Sobo, Hercules Star. Unfortunately, Amy is not able to be with us live this morning. However, I do have our pre-recorded interview for everyone to listen to. So without further delay, here is my interview with Amy Newmark. Good morning, Amy. Welcome back to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I am great. Thank you so much for having me back.
Wonderful. It's a pleasure to have you on the air with me. And just when I thought I have just finished reading the best Chicken Soup for the Soul, you come out with something awesome, and I really like this book. It's a wonderful book, and I'm sure it will be well received by both kids and parents as well. So congratulations.
Thanks. You know, every time I finish a book, it's my favorite, and then I do the next one, and that becomes my favorite. I guess it's like having children. You love every single one equally.
Tell us about Chicken Soup for the Soul, Think Positive for Kids. What is the motivation behind it?
Well, we had a book that we put out 3 years ago called Think Positive, which is for adults. Mm-hmm. And it's the most successful book we've put out in the past 6 years since I became publisher of mm-hmm. Chicken Soup for the Soul. And I really wanted to make a Think Positive book for kids because I thought that all the lessons that we had in our bestseller for adults were also lessons that would be wonderful for kids. Mm-hmm. And it's even more important for kids to get these lessons about self-esteem and doing the right thing and having a positive attitude because they become the adults of tomorrow. So we should really be imparting these lessons as early as possible so that they just become part of the children's persona and help to carry them through life. It's always wonderful to have these lessons in your arsenal, and when something happens to you, you just automatically know what you should do, you mm-hmm. know? And so yeah. That's why we made this book, Think Positive for Kids, and then we worked with Kevin Sorbo on it because he played Hercules, and it's funny, our book line started in 1993, and it's our 20th anniversary, and that's when the Hercules TV show was started, was 1993.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Kevin and I have this 20-year anniversary in common, and also we're both feeling a lot older these days when we thought back and realized that these things started 20 years ago. But I thought that Kevin, having played a superhero, would really resonate with kids. We even have a superhero image on the cover of the book. We have a little mm-hmm. boy wearing a red cape, and I love that image because when my son was little, for an entire year, he wore a red mm-hmm. cape to nursery school every day. And the other thing we wanted to do, and the other reason Kevin Sorbo is involved, is that what we do is we have a very large charitable giving program at Chicken Soup mm-hmm. for the Soul. I mean, we give a lot of money to charity. A lot of our charitable giving focuses on making life better for children. And occasionally we'll pick a specific book and we'll earmark that book where we have the royalties from that book go to a specific mm-hmm. charity. And we did that with this book, and the proceeds are going to a charity that Kevin co-chairs called A mm-hmm. World Fit for Kids, which, by the way, also started in 1993, 20 years ago. So everything seems to be oriented towards 1993. So that's what's going on with this book. It's great for kids. It's a great book that adults can use to share lessons with kids. Mm-hmm. We have Kevin in It seems to be all about 1993. We're supporting a great charity that makes life better for kids. So it's good all around. It's a, it's just the whole package, the whole project has been a fabulous experience for us.
Will Fit for Kids is a wonderful charity. I read a little bit about it. Apparently, they really focus on educating kids, building up their self-esteem. Can you tell us a little bit more about this charity?
You know, it's funny. Self-esteem is what I always thought was the most important thing I could give to my children. As a mother, I thought, if there's only one thing I'm allowed to give my kids, make it self-esteem, because self-esteem is what carries you through so many difficult times in your childhood. With self-esteem, you can make the right choices, and you can know what the right thing to do is, and you won't succumb to peer pressure, and you will carry yourself proudly and embrace whatever is different about you. Self-esteem would solve so many problems that everyone remembers having as children. So what A World Fit for Kids does is it pairs at-risk children, mainly in difficult parts of the Los Angeles area. It pairs them with older kids who come from the same background but have achieved. And these older kids mentor the younger kids, and they focus on three main themes. One is obesity reduction, which, of course, is a problem for kids nationwide, but it's particularly a problem for less advantaged children who don't have as much access to fresh fruits and vegetables and exercise programs and all of the things that go into combating obesity. Another thing that A World for Kids concentrates on is increased graduation rates. And they have an amazing statistic. 94% of the students who go through their training program and complete it have graduated from high school. And most of them have graduated from a high school that has less than a 50% graduation rate. So they're achieving 100% graduation rates in these very at-risk children in these difficult areas around Los Angeles. And then the third thing they work on is work readiness and preparing the kids to get jobs. Because, of course, fighting crime, fighting poverty, obviously, but all of this depends on being able to get jobs. The kids have to be trained how do you do an interview? What do you wear? What attitude do you show? What does it mean to arrive every single day on time? So they do all of that. So it's a really great program that has made a huge difference in Los Angeles, and the program is even sharing what they've learned with other children's groups nationwide. So even though this program is in Los Angeles, a lot of what they've learned is helping programs across the nation. So that's why we really wanted to support this program, and that's why Kevin co-chairs it, because he lives in the Los Angeles area. He's the father of three kids, and even though he and I are the same age, I guess he was pretty busy playing Hercules since he's got really young kids. Mine are grown and his are young.
Yeah. Well, the book and what you guys stand for are just wonderful, because to me, as I read the book comes across as a wonderful blueprint for personal success, addressing the essence of principles and values. Besides that, obviously, the book is a wonderful inspirational and educational tool and entertaining as well. So you got the whole package covered. These are the things that, to me, kids want excitement. They want to be able to really connect with the stories. And then the other thing I believe the book will do very well is, in some ways, it teaches parents and the caring adults a way to bridge the gap, the generation gap. How do we communicate with the younger generation, and especially with kids, and kids love storytelling.
Yeah, and it's how everybody likes to learn, right? So what we thought was that, especially these days where the kids are so distracted by technological devices, so they're always reading, you know, their instant messaging and doing stuff on their computers, instead of interacting with family members, teachers, grandparents, other kinds of mentors, we thought that this gives parents and grandparents and teachers and other mentors some ammunition. This gives them something they can use with kids. Younger kids can have the story read to them. Older kids can read the story themselves, and then they can sit and discuss this, because people are always looking for ways to have a conversation with children. And, of course, having a family dinner is a very good way to do that.
That's
but sometimes you have to do it when you're driving your kids someplace in the car.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we think that one of the best ways to start a conversation with a child is by reading a story about another child first. So we want to give people something they can use to start those important conversations with children about core values, good examples, making good decisions, having the courage to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And these are values that the children will learn today and carry with them for the rest of their lives. So we hope that this book helps people create building blocks to make wonderful, their children grow from wonderful children into wonderful adults. And I think that this book will accomplish that. You know what else is great about this book? When I was reading all of the stories, it was allowing me to revisit my own childhood. And I think that's an important thing for parents and teachers and grandparents to do. Sometimes it's good to read some stories about childhood, and then all of a sudden you remember your own experiences, which seemed so terribly important to you at the time, and you can then share those experiences with your children also.
It's true. One of the challenges is, of course, as an adult, we don't want to speak about areas of weaknesses because we feel we have to be a superhero. And the funny thing about it is that in the age of authenticity and transparency, being vulnerable is actually being a superhero.
That's
we want
true.
To know the kryptonite.
You know, my husband wrote a story for the book, revealed something that I had never known about him. And I said, are you sure you want to put your name on this?
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, I'm okay with it. Mm-hmm. And so, people, and I shared a couple of stories about things that, you know, I was pretty vulnerable on when I was a kid, and now I'm able to talk about them.
Right.
I think that as an adult, you're finally willing to share some of those experiences that when you were a kid were embarrassing or hurtful or... Mm-hmm. You know, things you never would have told anybody when you were a kid, but now with decades of experience, you're willing to share them and maybe help another kid not have those same hurt feelings.
Right. The generation has changed, too, because I know when I was growing up, suck it up there, young man. Boys don't cry. Men don't cry. So if you want to be a man, you got to just take it. It don't work that way. The thing about it is that when you have a problem, you want to talk about it. You want to express yourself. You want to get it out of the system, and you want to find solutions.
That's one of the great things about writing your experience. We sometimes get letters from people who have submitted stories for our books, and we didn't even publish their stories, and they write us thank you notes anyway, saying that just the act of putting their story down on paper allowed them to really organize their thoughts about that experience and come to grips with that experience and put it in its right place in their past, with perspective, coming away from the experience now with the lesson that they learned, but leaving the hurt behind.
Right.
And I think that that's important for people. And, of course, children learn best from other children. So even if you have an adult writing about the experience as a child, I noticed that the adults, when they were writing their stories, tended to write using more of the language that a child would use.
Right,
and they
kind
of transported themselves back to when they were 8 or 10 or 12 years old and relived it. And so I think that kids will find these stories are very relatable. It's really like a support group that a child could hold in his hand. And, you know, most children don't go to a support group, but they can still benefit from all of these wonderful older kids or adults sharing these stories quite selflessly.
Right.
Sharing parts of themselves that they never told anyone before to help the kids who are coming up behind them.
Right, right. Wonderful. So tell us about Kevin's story in the book.
So Kevin's story is about how he was this, you know he's like huge. I have a picture of me standing next to him. I feel like a pygmy. I mean, I am so tiny compared to him. And he's not even bulked up the way he was when he was playing Hercules. You know, now he's in his 50s, and he's like a tall, slender guy. And he's huge, though. I mean, I really look like a little tiny person next to him. But Kevin wrote about how he was a high school football player, and he was 15, and he went to have the mandatory physical before the season started, you know, and he strutted in there, mm-hmm. you know, of course he was fine. And then the doctor started looking really concerned, and the doctor called another doctor into the room, and turned out that Kevin had a hernia, and he needed surgery, and he would have to sit out the entire football season. And so he was just devastated. He just couldn't believe it. This was the worst thing in the world. And, of course, this would be the worst thing in the world to a 15-year-old, you know, high school athlete. So he ends up going to the hospital, having the surgery, wakes up in his, you know, semi-private room in the hospital the next day and meets his roommate, Jack, who is 7 years old. Mm-hmm. Jack comes over, asks him how he's doing, and Kevin tells him about his hernia surgery and how it's the end of the world. And then finally, after Kevin's finished complaining about how everything is so terrible for him, he asks, Jack, so what are you in here for? And Jack says, I have cancer. And then Kevin looks at Jack and realizes that he does look very pale and drawn.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kevin, all of a sudden, you know, sometimes just one person can change your life.
Right.
Kevin all of a sudden looked at this kid who was only 7 and might die. And Kevin realized how silly he was being. And, you know, he realized that he shouldn't feel sorry for himself. So it was one football season. And he's never forgotten the lesson he learned from that. And he said that he's always remembered it. And then I'm quoting his story now. He says, no matter how insurmountable you may think your troubles are, there is always someone out there who has a bigger mountain to climb. And so he said, you know, that's the perspective he got. So mm-hmm. it's great when you can have a lesson as a kid. Mm-hmm. And maybe by him writing about this, some other kid will be helped. And, you know, hopefully you can actually learn from people's experiences without having to have the experience yourself. Wouldn't that be
right.
fabulous? But I think you can. So maybe some other kid will develop perspective because of Kevin sharing this story.
It's just a wonderful story. When you're a kid, you're in the present moment. And there's some danger to the present moment, too, because it's here now that, oh, I didn't get this, oh, I got this, I'm celebrating, great. But when you don't get something, things don't go your way, then you are in the moment and it's like, oh, wow, it's such a big thing, that's the end of the world. And then when you realize that, wait a minute now, there's a lot of other things going on out there, and you are able to see and compare, and then you realize that this is a moment in time, and this too will pass.
Yeah, kids don't have perspective, I mean, and that's
mm-hmm.
just how they are.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
this book will help the kids develop some perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I like that fact about it a lot, because when you are a kid, everything is a crisis. It's the worst thing that
yeah.
ever happened.
No question, but I remember, for me, it's like everything is a need. It's never a want, because I need it now. In reading the book, I tell you, I have to say that I'm relating to so many different aspects of the story. Oh, yeah, that happened to me. I've experienced that. That's what I like about the various stories. So that leads me to the fact that I've selected several stories in the book as talking points for this morning. If you could give us a quick rundown of the stories, that would be wonderful. So can we start with the first one?
Oh, sure. So the first story in the book, and I always put one of my favorites first, it's by Gary Graham, who, if you look him up on your computer and you see his mm-hmm. picture, you'll say, oh, I recognize that guy. He's been in all kinds of TV shows and movies, and he's a friend of Kevin Sorbo's, and that's how mm-hmm. we got his story, because Kevin asked a bunch of his friends to contribute stories.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really funny, because I saw my own son do this. My son basically mm-hmm. wrote a book because of a girl and then
mm-hmm.
got it published, but really the whole thing was about a girl who he's now going to marry. But anyway, so Gary did something because of a girl. He joined the junior high orchestra, and he ended up playing the cello, which was a completely unfamiliar instrument to him. And then, to his surprise, he realized he really liked playing the cello, and he got very competitive about playing the cello. And so it had started out impressing a girl, but then it turned into impressing the girl and really loving the cello, and I think that he said something really important in his story. He said, I had loving, supportive parents and a dad who was always spouting optimism. Mm-hmm. And this goes back to the whole self-esteem thing.
Right.
I'll tell you in a moment what Gary did, but he wouldn't have done it if he didn't have that support system at home. And he had these supportive parents who always loved him and made him feel that he could do anything and gave him really good self-esteem. And that's why he took on this challenge, joining the orchestra as a newbie, picking up the cello. He was, you know how they have the chairs and you kind of
right,
work your way
right.
up through the chairs? And they do a chair challenge. So he starts out as the worst one. Then you're allowed to do a chair challenge each week. So you practice and practice, and you challenge the guy in the next chair. And then if you play a piece better than that guy, then you switch chairs. And he kept working his way up, working his way up. And he ended up making it all the way to first chair, which was unbelievable. And nobody ever thought he would do that. Mm-hmm. He knocked off the person who was considered to be, you know, like the unbelievably fabulous cello player. And he got to play the cello solo in the Christmas concert.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then he says at the end, he says, I learned from my parents. So again, like parents, like keep that
yeah.
self-esteem going. He said, I learned that you can achieve your dreams. Don't listen to anyone, not even yourself, if they tell you it's impossible. And then he said something really interesting. He said, if you've got a dream, go for it. And then he says, and I love this sentence, it's in your heart for a reason. So that was interesting because he's saying, if you have a dream, it was put into you for a reason because you really are supposed to go for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that because
yeah.
it means don't necessarily dismiss some kind of impossible dream that you have because you might actually achieve it. So that was a really good story. I loved it.
Right.
And I was very happy that this famous actor took the time to give us his story.
The good thing that came up from that story as well, and you mentioned earlier about support from the parents, and one of the things that he wrote in the book is that his mom actually finally poked into the room and saying that, you know, it really sounds quite good because they're all concerned about him as well.
Yeah, I think that kids, no matter what they say,
mm-hmm.
kids always want to impress their parents. And I think
right.
it happens throughout your whole life. I mean,
yeah.
Even when I started doing this job and publishing mm-hmm. these books, I
mm-hmm.
proudly brought the first few books to show to my parents.
Yeah.
You never stop trying to please your parents and get their approval.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very true. Well, let's go to the next one, doing things right. And this is kind of a fun thing, my bad reputation, and I think we all have that. Maybe not you. For me, I have it.
Yeah, I actually did have a bad reputation as a kid, but it turned out not to be my fault. I started getting a reputation for not listening, and I started getting in trouble for not listening all the time when my mother would tell me to do something.
Yeah,
it turned out I had 90% hearing loss.
Oh,
and I had to go and get my tonsils and adenoids out.
Oh,
so it wasn't really my fault.
Yeah, it's like, are you deaf? Huh? You didn't?
Yeah,
you
I
didn't
was.
Hear me? Are you crazy?
I was.
Oh,
it just
no.
came on gradually, so nobody realized
it. Oh, wow.
It.
Wow.
But here's the funny thing. This story that you've
yeah.
collected is
yeah.
actually by my right-hand person, Diet Corona, who's the
yeah.
assistant publisher of Chicken Soup for the Soul. And I couldn't believe it when I read her story.
Right.
It's sometimes amazing the things that people did as little kids that I would never have thought she would do. She says that when she was in third grade, she started lying all the time.
Mm-hmm.
For no good reason. I mean, she would lie that she had eaten her dinner when, in fact, she hadn't. Maybe it was because she was the middle child and she was just trying to get attention because
mm-hmm.
She was the middle of three girls. But anyway, she got this terrible reputation for lying. Of course, it was a well-deserved reputation. And she went to stay at her aunt's house, and this was her really fun aunt who didn't have kids and had great art supplies and gave them hot dogs and mac and cheese for dinner. And so they were so excited about having their weekend at Aunt Kim's. And then one of her sisters took one of those big rubber art erasers and rubbed it across the top of Aunt Kim's TV. Why, I don't know, but kids do bizarre things. And so, of course, when Aunt Kim asked the three girls who had done it, everyone assumed that DF had done it. She actually had not done it. Her sister didn't fess up. So Diet got sent home for something that she hadn't done. And then finally her little sister confessed, and Diet got to go back to Aunt Kim's house the next day for the rest of the weekend. But she really learned a lesson from that, which is that you do get a reputation, and then your reputation is going to stain you whether you do something bad or not. And she said that from that day forward in third grade, she never lied again.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was a good story because little kids do silly things like that.
Right, right. And again, the motivation is, can I get away with it? God forbid, sometimes you do get away with it, and that motivates you in the wrong direction.
That's true. But then there's always consequences. And
right.
You know, we always make sure that we talk about the consequences in this book. There are always consequences to that bad behavior. So we all, like, it's funny, even in our books for teens, if somebody drinks, there's always consequences. Mm-hmm. Like, you never
right.
just get away with it in a Chicken Soup for the Soul book.
Well, there's lessons to be learned. Every
yeah,
action
exactly.
causes a reaction, and so forth. So consequences is part of the deal. The third one that I really like is, and this is in the section, by the way, handling bullies. And what I like about the book as well is that you have broken it down very nicely to so many different sections that just kind of gets to you and really keep things focused. In today's world, you constantly hear about bullies, and you have a wonderful section about bullies. This particular story is just wonderful. Don't Pass It On by Danny Johnson.
Yeah, what I liked about this is that she not only was bullied, but then she became a bully.
Mm-hmm.
And Danny Johnson, by the way, is another one of Kevin Sorbo's friends who gave us a story. And she is a well-known TV personality. She grew up in a really rough and tough environment. Her parents were on drugs. You know, they were practically homeless. She did become homeless at one point. And she turned her life around, and she was basically pregnant at 17, homeless at 21, and a millionaire at 23. And so now she's a TV and radio host. She's appeared on Oprah. She's appeared on Secret Millionaire. And she's, you know, now reaching out and trying to help other children. So again, she selflessly shared something about herself, which could be viewed as being embarrassing. But she talked about how she was the kid who went to school in, you know, the threadbare
mm-hmm.
hand-me-down clothing. And, you know, she was just different from the other kids because her parents were drug addicts and, you know, they lived in a very rough way and they didn't have any money. And so she was always ashamed of herself, and these girls would tease her. And they basically bullied her so much and said all these terrible things to her. And she started to believe that she wasn't as good as they were. And she believed that she was ugly and stupid and weak. And then she started bullying her two younger sisters, just as the other kids had bullied her. Because she says, and I'm quoting from her story, "I didn't know what to do with the pain, rejection, anger, and confusion I felt. So I did what most people do, I hurt others." And then she goes on to say, you know, "Don't take your pain out on your brothers and sisters or other kids. Speak to others the way you wish they would speak to you. What you say to others will be said to you." Yeah, bad behavior mm-hmm. will boomerang back to hit you in the face. But I thought it was interesting because everybody talks about how maybe bullies are just scared, unhappy.
Right.
You know, unhappy kids themselves with low self-esteem, and so they lash out at other kids. And she's
mm-hmm.
saying, absolutely, she became a bully because she was bullied. And, you know, there are people who say if you try to befriend a bully, it will really work.
Mm-hmm.
They will actually turn around, and there are stories in our book about that. Now, I
mm-hmm.
don't know if it's always a good strategy, because sometimes it's better to just stay away from a bully.
Right.
Especially maybe if you're a boy and the bully could beat you up and physically
right.
harm you. But it does seem like the root cause of bullying is often that a bully is being bullied somewhere else, maybe at home,
mm-hmm.
where the teachers and the school kids don't even know it's happening.
Right.
So it was very thought-provoking, and it was interesting because as I was putting this manuscript together and putting the final touches on it, a boy in our town committed suicide after he went to his first day of, I think, 10th grade,
mm-hmm.
and he was bullied yet again, and that was it
mm-hmm.
for him. I guess, you know, going back to school,
yeah.
first day of the new school year, and it's still happening, and he went and killed himself, which was horrible. And now there's all these anti-bullying initiatives going on in our town.
Right.
And, of course, too late for this poor kid. But anyway, we focused a lot on bullying in this book because it is such an important issue these days. Maybe it's gotten worse because of the digital technology, because now
mm-hmm.
you can bully people in so many additional ways, and you can bully people now without having to look at them.
Right,
and I wonder
right.
if some kids who are bullying now because they can do it through Facebook or Twitter or
mm-hmm.
you know, instant messaging, if maybe they wouldn't bully if they had to stand there and look at the kid they're bullying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it makes even more kids into bullies, I think. So
right.
we do
right.
have that whole chapter about dealing with bullies and not becoming one yourself and all of that. So I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. The other thing about bullies, too, I think they have always existed, and this is the interesting part. I mean, it's happening all over the world. What technology does, even though you're right, no question about it, that it gives bullies added avenues or weapons, in this case, to use and utilize and for their advantage. But at the same time, what it does is that it brings the bully out in the open as well, because I think before, the fact that it is a shadow kind of thing, nobody knows about it. Now, unfortunately, you're tagged. You will be found out. And so if there's any consolation out of this whole thing is that you can't hide. You can run, but you can't hide if you're
That's
a bully.
That's true. Yeah, because if you were bullied 20 years ago, maybe some kid mm-hmm. bullied you on the bus.
Yeah.
Well, there was no way your mother was going to know.
Precisely.
Unless you told her, or unless some kid told his mother and that mother called your mother. But now,
right.
since it's electronic,
yeah.
schools, teachers, parents, there's more people who can find out about it and try to stop it. There's
mm-hmm.
definitely more awareness now. I mean, that's something that has really changed a lot, is people mm-hmm. are more aware now that you should tell on people. Like, I remember
mm-hmm.
when I was in middle school, and this was, wow, you know, like more than 40 years ago, there was a teacher who was a pervert, and he
mm-hmm.
would go around and feel all the girls' shoulders to see if they had a bra
oh.
strap yet. Because
wow.
middle school is when the girls were switching,
right.
you know,
right.
from like an undershirt
right.
or something to
right.
having a bra.
Right.
And every girl knew about this. We all knew about it. We all knew to stay away from Mr. So-and-so.
Right.
No one ever told anybody about it. It didn't
yeah.
even occur to any of us to go and tell somebody. Today,
oh, yeah.
kids are so sensitized to that now, kids
right.
would immediately go and report the guy.
That's right.
So,
yeah.
It's true. There is more reporting now through the technology and through the education of kids. So that is the positive side of it. You're right. Even though there are more tools to use for bullying, there are definitely
yeah.
more ways to be found out.
Yeah. Is being brought to the forefront versus back then, you don't have proof. It's very difficult to prove things. Now, it's different.
That's
just
true.
Go to
you
YouTube.
Can take a video.
Right.
You can take a video of it. Your
right.
teacher wouldn't even know.
Yeah, and so it changes the dynamics a little bit, which in some ways is very encouraging. So I'm really glad in some ways, I think, that the technology is there to help and assist.
That
in
is
a positive
true.
Way. Yeah.
Yeah, as long as it's not overused. You have
oh,
a story
no
that I know
it.
You wanted to ask me about, going a little out of order here because it's near the
yeah,
end
yeah,
of the
yeah.
book, but it's a story called Cell Phone Madness.
Yeah.
Because it's about a girl who got a cell phone when she turned 12, which seems like a reasonable age to get a cell phone these days. Then, you know, I mean, I think that's reasonable because then, you know, you can let your mom know if she should pick
yeah.
you up 15 minutes later from soccer practice or whatever. But the girl, being 12, let the phone totally take over her life. And it got to the point where she wasn't paying attention to her parents. She wasn't doing her homework. Her grades started going down. I mean, she became obsessed because, hey, she was only 12. You know, she had to learn balance. And she says in her story, phones really take you away from the rest of the world. You know how we all say they connect
you.
But if you're not connecting with the real live warm human beings who are standing next to you, I don't care how many people you're connecting with over texting, you're not really connecting with people anymore. So she had to learn that balance so that having the phones didn't interfere with her real life with real human beings.
It's a wonderful story. I mean, you can see two kids sitting right across from each other. Rather than talking, they're texting each other to communicate.
I know. Have you seen that? You go out for dinner. I've gone out to dinner, and I've seen like four, you know, 20-something guys sitting at a table. And they're obviously friends, and they're sitting at a table, and they're all looking at their phones, and they're all texting and doing stuff on their phones.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, why are you out to dinner together?
Right.
Because they're not talking to each other at all.
Mm-hmm.
It can be fun to have a phone. Sometimes now when we go out with friends, we're talking about something and somebody will Google and get the answer to something that has come up during conversation. So that's a time when I think it's okay to use the phone because it was furthering the conversation between warm human beings.
Right, right. So it's changed. Communication, the mode of communication has changed tremendously. The next story is making good choices. I like this because I guess maybe being a naturalized citizen, I believe in Pledge of Allegiance and stuff like that. So, but it's a wonderful story. I chose that because I think it's something that you make good choices and you stick by it no matter what happens around you. And this story is by Beth Cato, Pledge Allegiance.
Yeah, so Beth is one of our regular writers, and interestingly, she did become the wife of somebody serving in the military. So her early patriotic stance continued when she did marry a guy in the military. But what she talked about here was how in junior high school, there were these kids who tried to basically bully her into not doing the Pledge of Allegiance. And she had gym class, PE, for first period. And that was, and they always did the Pledge of Allegiance during first period. And so the other girls, since they weren't in a regular classroom, they were just in the gym, they knew they could get away with not doing the pledge. And so they would horse around during the pledge, but Beth took it seriously. Her grandpa had died the year before, and he had served in World War II, and the flag always had a special meaning for him. And in her family, even if they were just at home and the TV was on and they heard the national anthem on TV, they would stop everything, you know, and stand at attention, respectfully listening to the pledge or the national anthem. And so she was raised in a very patriotic home to honor our country. And by the second week of school in gym class, she was the only girl in the whole locker room who did the Pledge of Allegiance. So all these other girls were teasing her for it. The nice thing was that she had the courage to do it. Mm-hmm. And she never got the other girls to go along with her to do the pledge. But you know what? Now she's an adult, and she can be proud of the stance that she took in seventh grade. And imagine how she would feel now if she hadn't done the pledge.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying people have to do the pledge, but if it's something that you want to do, don't let anybody bully you into not doing it. And now she can be proud that she did it no matter what. I mean, so you need self-esteem, you need the courage of your convictions to stand up to kids who try to keep you from doing what you believe is the right thing to do. So I thought that was a great story because not only is it a story about doing what you believe in and doing the right thing, but everyone has the Pledge of Allegiance at school.
Right.
So every single kid knows what she's talking about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For me, it's a little bit personal from a standpoint, like, believe me, I believe in what the Pledge of Allegiance says. And so it's a little bit different. I mean, if you've been overseas, if you live overseas, and a lot of people tend to say, oh, well, there's so many things wrong here. Trust me. Leave the country and you'll find out. So
that's true. That's true. Every time I leave the country just to go on, you know, a tourist trip to another country, I come back realizing how great our country is.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a little bit different. You have some selected stories as well, because I'm sure as you put this book together, there's some stories that kind of really connect to you in so many ways, and it's not necessarily favorite here and there kind of thing, but it just got, sort of connects with you. What are some of those stories that you wanted to share with us?
Well, one of them is by Kevin Sorbo's wife, and she shared a very revealing story about herself also. It's so great, all these celebrities telling us these inside stories about their childhoods, which they may have never told anybody before. And so Kevin Sorbo's wife, Sam, who was on Hercules with him, she was the gorgeous sidekick, and now has the three kids with him and everything, and is still gorgeous, and she has a radio show also. So she was in junior high, and she really wanted to fit in with the cool girls in the class, so she tried to dress like them, and she tried to wear her hair the same way that they did. And she also joined the Girl Scouts, because the popular girls were all in the Girl Scouts, so she was very excited to be part of that group. But then there was this one girl in the Girl Scouts who was overweight and very uncool, and the other girls, the so-called popular girls, started bullying this girl and were really nasty. And then the Girl Scouts troop was going on a camping trip, and one day one of the cool girls said to Sam, come and meet us in the staircase after school. So Sam thought, oh, wow, that's great. I'm in with the popular girls now. So she goes to the staircase after school, and this unpopular girl that is there. And then one of the popular girls says, and includes Sam in this, says, we have decided that you can't go on the camping trip with us. And Sam was just frozen, but didn't say anything. And she had never said that this girl couldn't go on the camping trip with them.
Right.
And so this poor girl maintained her dignity and walked away. And Sam didn't say anything mean to the girl, but she also didn't stand up for her and say, wait a minute, I never said she couldn't go on the camping trip with us. So Sam went home, told her mother about it, and the unpopular girl still didn't go on the camping trip. She claimed that instead she was going away for the weekend with her dad, but that was just to save face. So Sam went on the camping trip, was extremely uncomfortable with these popular girls, and they got all these badges, which had no meaning for her, considering that the unpopular girl had been forced, you know, off the trip, and Sam ended up quitting the Girl Scouts troop. Now, I would think this was a very rare situation in the Girl Scouts, because in most cases, the troop leaders would never let something like this happen. I'm not saying that this happens in Girl Scouts. This was one particular time. But anyway, she learned that, you know, she had no interest in the popular girls after all. And we actually have numerous stories in this book about girls getting into the popular group, you know, after striving for it, wanting it so much, and then once they're in the popular group, hating it, realizing how awful the girls are, and immediately leaving the popular group to go back to genuine, real friends again.
Right, right.
Oh, another story I have, which I think is very, very cool, is this is a story I really like. This is a guy we met just this past year, I guess. His name is Jody Fuller, and he has a problem with stuttering. And he did something really smart as a kid. He, you know, stuttered all the time. It was a family problem. His grandfather stuttered, his uncle stuttered, his brother stuttered. Jody is now 41. He still stutters. But when he was a kid, you know, it was very awkward at school if the teacher called on him to read something out loud or whatever. And all of a sudden, Jody had this epiphany, and he said, I'm going to embrace my stuttering. I'm going to flaunt my stuttering. I'm going to make it part of me. I'm no longer going to try to hide. So instead of hiding when it was time to read, he started putting his hand up and volunteering every single time. And all of a sudden, he was still stuttering, but he got over his shame about stuttering, and he started being really good at public speaking despite the stuttering, and the other kids ended up completely accepting him. Nobody was teasing him for it. And now he joined the military, and now he is a speaker and a comedian and a writer, and he goes out and he addresses stuttering groups, and he embraced what he called his uniqueness. And I think that's a good role model for kids who have whatever is wrong with them. We have a whole chapter about embracing what's different about yourself. Kids who have, even, you know, like girls who thought their arms were too hairy. Believe it or not, that's a big problem for girls. Girls who think their arms are too hairy. That happens all the time. So we have stories about that. We have stories about all these things that make kids different, where they have to get over it. You know, one girl thought that she had the ugliest nose in the world, and she was in sixth grade, so this was a huge crisis.
Yeah.
And then she learned that her nose was actually very pretty. So we have all of that. And I have another story that really made an impact on me. And it also teaches you that your role models can be in your own family.
Right.
And this story is called My Sister, My Hero. And it's about this girl, Jill, who had a sister a year older than her. And there was a girl who everyone was teasing, except that Jill's sister was defending her and always, you know, sticking up for her, spending time with her. And this embarrassed Jill because these horrible bullies started teasing Jill just because her sister was nice to this other girl. And so Jill first got mad at her sister, you know, and said, how can you be defending her? You're just embarrassing me. And then her sister said to her, I'm sorry, but I'm defending her because she has a terminal illness. She's going to die. And she's actually a wonderful person, and she has to wear diapers to school because she has a terminal illness. And that opened up Jill's eyes, and she was very proud of her sister after that, and she's always watched her sister go through life, making friends with everyone, being supportive of everyone, and she just had an epiphany that night when her sister explained that she was supporting this girl because of her illness, and this was an important lesson to pass on. You don't know why somebody is the way they are. So this girl wore diapers to school because she had a terminal illness.
Right.
And she was going to die, and you know, like, this was a very brave girl going to school and trying to get as much education as she could, despite the prognosis.
That's a wonderful story. The stories that you've covered are just wonderful. Coming back to Jody Fuller's story, I mean, here's someone that took the challenge and turned it upside down, basically, and embraced his uniqueness, and I believe he was also in your book this past summer that addresses From Lemon to Lemonades.
Yes, he was. So what happened was I saw his story that we published in From Lemon to Lemonade, and we actually asked him to write a story for the Think Positive for Kids book because there's something like 1% of the population has some kind of stuttering problem.
Right, right.
And so we thought it would be really important to get a story from him for kids. So we said, please write a story about what it was like to be a stutterer as a child and how you handled it, never imagining that he would write such a powerful story about how he started volunteering to speak in front of the class at every opportunity. So this was a great bonus for us, asking for the story and getting such a powerful one.
Yeah. Well, that's part of building self-esteem and overcoming all the odds and taking charge. It's a wonderful, wonderful story from that perspective. You have a couple of stories in there as well, and they are wonderful stories. So share that with us.
Yeah, I wrote two stories about my two best friends when I was a child. And, I mean, one of the stories, I never told anybody, you know, this story, but this, it's called Learning How to Kick. And what happened was I changed schools in fourth grade. I switched from a private school to the public school near my house. Luckily, my two best friends from private school also switched to this public school, which was, you know, recently built. And so all three of us switched. And at this new school, the recess activity was kickball. And I had never played kickball before. And my entire class went out every day and played kickball and played it as a class. And every day teams were chosen. And I don't know if you remember what that feels like, but, you know, you don't want to be the last kid chosen. Well, I was the last kid chosen because I had never played kickball before, and I had no idea how to kick the ball, and I was the oldest child in my household in a neighborhood without kids, so there was no one to teach me anything. And so I started to dread recess because I was always, you know, at the top of the class in my academic subjects, and here I was, the worst kid at kickball. So I was miserable during fourth grade whenever it came to recess. That summer between fourth grade and fifth grade, I confessed my problem to my friend Carlta. And she showed me how to kick the ball. And it really hurt. She showed me how to kick that red rubber ball with the front of my ankle. So that really hurt because that was that red rubber against bare skin.
But
my kick was so powerful. I started kicking, you know, solid doubles or even home runs. And so I practiced all summer, and then I went back, and I started being one of the first girls picked every time, and I was so happy. And I was talking to my other best friend about it recently, and she said, Amy, you know what? You don't remember, but Carlta taught me how to kick the ball that summer, too. The two of us learned it from Carlta and became better kickball players. This was like my secret shame in fourth grade, that I was terrible at kickball. These things really matter when you're, when you're 10 years old.
Right. And you want to come across as someone that knows everything in a way because that's pride. I mean, you don't want to come across as someone that, well, I'm not good at that or this or that. So that's true, yeah.
Yeah. And I was good at skiing. I mean, I was good at every other sport. I was good at tennis. So, yeah, it was a new experience being bad at something. Now, my friend Priscilla, the one who learned how to kick the kickball with me, this was interesting because Priscilla was the most popular girl in my grade every year and a real trendsetter. And everybody would do what she did. If she bought a certain pair of shoes, every other girl in the school would buy the same pair of shoes. If she liked a boy, it was the same boy that everyone else had a crush on. But who would get the boy? It would be Priscilla. She was incredible, but she was incredibly nice. She was a nice, popular girl. She was never mean. Well, it was only in the last few years that I learned that Priscilla never knew she was popular.
Wow.
She was just as insecure as the rest of us. She had no idea that the boy that she ended up with was the boy everyone else had a secret crush on. She had no idea that everyone else bought the same shoes that she had. I was astounded that she had no idea. It just shows you that girl who you think is so popular and confident and knows everything and gets the boy and wears the right clothes, she might be just as insecure as you are. It was really interesting when I found out that she had no idea. And she said, my kids aren't going to believe it. You know? So I wrote about her. I called her the nice popular girl.
That's wonderful. So, besides the best places to get the book, where can people go to find out more information about Chicken Soup products? The last time when we talked, you guys have introduced some wonderful comfort foods for the soul.
Yeah. So, we're 20 years old this year, and we're moving beyond the bookstore. We're moving onto your pantry shelves. We're moving into your TV. We're moving to your movie screen. So, we have made so many exciting announcements. We have a new line of comfort food that is out there. In Texas, H-E-B is selling our pasta sauces. On the East Coast, Stop and Shop is selling our soups. If you go to our website, chickensoup.com, you can not only see descriptions of all our books, including this one with links to buy the book from Amazon or Barnes & Noble, but you'll also see a whole section for our new food products. And there's a map showing where the food is being sold across the country. Food is absolutely delicious. We've also announced that we're making a major motion picture with Al Kahn. Al Kahn is the same studio that brought us The Blind Side, which is a very Chicken Soupy kind of movie. We feel very comfortable with the people at Al Kahn. They know how to make a movie that is great entertainment also imparts lessons, can be shared by the whole family.
Yeah.
We also have a daily talk show that we're putting together, which will start in 2014. And people will be able to see Chicken Soup for the Soul stories come to life. The contributors of the stories will come on and talk about them. There will be all kinds of interesting segments on that show, all revolving around what we do best, which is sharing happiness, inspiration, and wellness through everything we do, whether it's our books, whether it's our food, our movie, our TV show. We also have a line of high-end dog food and cat food, and our sales are growing very fast in that area because everything we do is very genuine and authentic. We only use the highest quality ingredients. Our finance people don't necessarily like that because everything costs more. That's what we want to do. Everything has to be the best it can possibly be for us to put our name on it because our name is really important to us. We've spent 20 years building the Chicken Soup for the Soul name, which is a name that you can trust, that you know will always be genuine and real. So in the food, no artificial flavors, as an example. Everything is real. So that's what we're doing, lots of other things besides our wonderful books.
That sounds really great. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the hour. Since our show is about people, family, and living life, what would you like to share as a recipe for living with our listeners this morning?
Well, I've learned so much from Chicken Soup for the Soul stories over the years, and so I've put together a list of some of the things that I feel are very important to continue to live a happy, productive life where you're growing every day. And so I picked up so much great advice from the thousands of stories that we've published that one of the things I've learned is you always need to be pursuing one of your passions. So even if you have a job that just pays the bills, pursue a passion in your free time. They say you should do whatever you did when you were 10 years old that you loved. So for me, that's reading and hiking in the woods. Everyone has a different passion. Another thing is to always count your blessings. Be grateful for what you have. It's amazing how you can turn your life around just by writing down what you're grateful for every day. And by the way, our Think Positive for Kids book does talk a lot about gratitude. Another tip is keep learning. Try new things. Try things you're a little frightened of because you can get into a rut as you get older. But always try new things, whether it's a new instrument, a new language, travel to a new country, take a lesson in something. Just shop at a different grocery store so that the aisles are all different, so that you're using your brain to figure out where everything is. And another tip would be to always take some time for yourself, no matter what you're doing. If you're listening to a song on the radio and you like it when you pull into your garage, spend one more minute sitting in the car, listen to that song, and then go inside and start, you know, whatever chores you have to do. But you've got to have a little balance in your life. So those are some of the things that I've picked up from reading all of these tens of thousands of great stories.
That's wonderful. Amy, as usual, it's always a pleasure to have you on the air with me. Those are wonderful recipes for living. The things that you guys are doing at Chicken Soup, I'm really excited about the upcoming events for 2014. And I think it's going to be a fabulous year for you guys at Chicken Soup.
Thank you. It really is shaping up to be a great 20th anniversary year.
Fantastic. Thank you, and have a great day. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. I hope you have enjoyed the pre-recorded interview with Amy Newmark. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be award-winning author Eleanor Sullivan. Eleanor and I will be discussing her latest fact-based novel from the Singular Village mystery series set in Zoa. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to fmmktalkradio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Bye-bye.